you sit in traffic now. But later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Deuce. Deuce and Mo. They tell you what they know. Deuce and Mo. The podcast that you know.
We've been talking for like 10 minutes before this is actually starting, but we're super excited for this, a special edition of the Deuce and Mo podcast. We're joined by a few people who cover the Kings, who literally cover the Kings year-round. I think their lives are the Sacramento Kings.
Correct.
We've got Matt George from Locked On Kings and ABC 10. And then we've got Frankie Cardicelli and Brendan Nunez from Sactown Sports and SactownSports.com. We figured, let's just get together in the middle of the offseason and take a step back and see where the Kings are at this point. I'm interested to get your guys' perspective tonight as I sip a beautiful Aperol Spritz.
Yeah, cheers. Cheers. I say deuce and then cheers. I'm shitting on him and then cheers.
Have you guys had an Aperol Spritz?
Yeah, no. Of course. Delicious.
I love that Frankie says, way he said, yeah, of course, it was like, oh God, I haven't, but I want to just say I have.
Hold on. I got something. I got a bone to pick real quick.
Ooh,
first of all, thank you for having me on.
Good start.
Thank you for having me on. And the whole point is, look, I get we work together and
I'm
on with you guys twice a week.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
This is the first time I've ever been on your guys' podcast.
Dude, Matt just said the same thing.
Me too, brother.
So,
you too.
Just saying, I've been on about 3-4 times.
Oh!
But, you know.
So, we had Frankie on at 11:40 all the time. So, come on, guys. But thank you for having me.
Look,
finally, and Matt. Not Matt.
We're not allowed to have me on that other show, so I'm glad. I'm here.
You know, Frankie, we can focus on the past. I'm in the present now, and I'm just grateful that you're here hanging out with me on this evening. I didn't know you. I wasn't expecting you to take a shot at me out of the gate, and that's fine.
Don't let him gaslight you either, Frankie. You know what he's doing.
I like to know where we're at, and you've kind of established that.
In
this one. So that's good.
That is absolutely a fair point, and honestly, I would never bring that up on someone's podcast, but yeah, no, it's so great to hear that from you and Matt. I love it. You guys are great. Just
I
super
also
blunt.
Would never wear my own merch, but you know.
I know. You guys, that's all I wear. I'm so gross, and I honestly kind of hate it because now everyone points it out. They're like, hey, you're wearing Deuce and Mo merch. And I'm like, yeah, well, it's affordable and it's comfortable because I make it. So, I mean, obviously not physically together, but like I pick out exactly what size, what fabric and everything that it goes along with it. So yeah, I'm going to have a full closet of Deuce and Mo merch. A little weird, maybe, but I don't care.
If I play in the NBA, I'm 100% wearing my jersey out. Like if you're just going out,
you're a psycho
on a Saturday, wouldn't it be cool to just, if you're De'Aaron Fox and you were like in Midtown and you're like, I'm going to go out and get a drink and you're just wearing your jersey.
Does anybody do that?
It'd be cooler to wear a teammate's jersey.
None of it would be cool, guys. Matt, do
hasn't
not.
Hasn't Kevin Herter done that before? Hasn't Kevin Herter worn like a teammate's jersey before?
Maybe.
I'm thinking of the fake Kevin Herter.
Well, no, not him.
That's what I thought you were saying. That's funny.
Well, I want to dive into something that came out the other day. ESPN did this survey. They're coming up with off-season content. And they talked to, I think it was like 18 different execs, coaches, and scouts around the league. And the question was asked, what was the worst move of the NBA offseason? Hmm. Nowhere in my mind I would think that DeMar DeRozan to the Sacramento Kings would be up there. But three votes for Sacramento's part in the DeRozan trade, three votes for Chicago's part in the DeMar DeRozan trade, and then three for Paul George signed by the Sixers. Did that surprise you guys like it surprised me? Are we missing something with this? Because they should read this too.
Oh.
The explanation from one of the voters saying the opportunity cost of not giving runway to Keegan Murray was kind of something that gave them a little pause, and they believe that's a bad bet on the fits. So someone take it away. What's the reaction?
The Sacramento Kings could have traded a second round pick for Giannis Antetokounmpo, and someone would write about how the Kings are going to regret trading the second round pick. The nonsense about a 2031 pick swap being a concern, and everybody's screaming, you have to improve Harrison Barnes, you have to upgrade Harrison Barnes, and then you do it. It's like, how could you trade Harrison Barnes away as part of the deal? And no disrespect to HB, I think it's a fantastic pickup for the San Antonio Spurs. There's no scenario where adding a six-time All-Star, and in my opinion, first ballot Hall of Famer, is a bad thing to an offense that took a step back last year, but two seasons ago was the best offense in the NBA. So, I mean, it doesn't surprise me, because anything the Sacramento Kings do, it feels like, is met with some sort of criticism. If there's concerns about fit, I get it. I had a conversation with NBA assistant coach who told me that they think DeMar DeRozan is a fantastic fit in Sacramento, and they think that DeMar DeRozan solves a lot of the issues of the Kings offense, not just from last year, but even the year before when they were so good. So I'll choose to put my eggs in that basket over people just not liking it because the Kings are attached to it.
Yeah, you guys, because like I understand if people like don't like it or whatever. Like, people are going to have their opinions. But the fact that it's, like, getting voted one of the worst, even if it's just a couple of votes, I just find that very odd. And I'm kind of with you, Matt. I'm like, is there some weird pettiness that's going along with it? Because at the end of the day, when you see someone like DeMar DeRozan with his resume, not only as a basketball player on the court, but as a human being, as a leader, and like how that doesn't just make your locker room better instantly. I just don't think that any team would regret a move like that.
Well, and the thing that you keep seeing, I'm not sure if you guys do, is it goes back to Harrison Barnes. And look, I think Harrison Barnes was a good King during his years here. I mean, the numbers are good. He shot the ball well, great in the locker room. We know how much the guys loved him in and out and around that locker room and the fan base as well. But I keep seeing his name pop up in these, you know, whether it's that great or a reaction from a national media member. I mean, I think that Harrison Barnes' defense has become this mythical thing that was way better than we all remember it. And I know that we all watched every second or maybe almost every second of Sacramento Kings basketball. And was Harrison Barnes a lost cause on defense? I wouldn't say a lost cause, no, but he was not a positive, I would say. And I think that by saying the Kings have gotten worse by subtracting Harrison Barnes and adding DeMar DeRozan for that reason is just pretty crazy. I mean, and I think one other aspect of it is that we know the Kings, when De'Aaron Fox is on and Malik Monk is on, both at the same time, they have a great chance of pulling out these wins. But when the offense staggers and De'Aaron kind of doesn't have it going and Malik doesn't have it, if Keegan's having a passive night.
Yes.
Who's stepping up? Sabonis isn't able to. I mean, Domas is so dominant in certain stretches, but you can't really give him the ball and have him ISO like DeMarcus Cousins back in his heyday here. Having DeMar DeRozan, one of the NBA's premier ISO scorers of the past decade, a six-time All-Star, probably in the Hall of Fame when his career is over, still has a lot in the tank at 35. I just can't sit here and say the Kings got worse by making that deal.
Yeah, the Harrison stuff, I mean, this dude gets talked about like he's a good defender. He was not. Hate to be that guy, but he really was not during his time in Sacramento. And he often may have been the best option that the Kings had, which in my mind says more about their roster rather than Harrison specifically. But I think it's objectively, it's a talent upgrade. And I don't think there's really a way to fight that. I do think that the 2030 or 2031, whatever pick swap it is overlooked a little bit. That could be really bad in the future. Like there's it's so far out and it's unprotected that could look horrible. And I do understand everybody having, you know, some skepticism about that. It also could be nothing. And that's what makes it a complicated conversation, right? Is that it could be totally nothing. It could be Jason Tatum all over again. You know what I mean? So
yeah, Brendan,
I think there's both sides to that swap.
I'm with you on that. It's a thing that I've joked about a little bit because I'm like, look, with your Sacramento, you got a chance to get DeMar DeRozan. Are you going to let a pick swap 7 years from now get in the way of that when you can upgrade, right? Like sometimes you got in the NBA, you got to take some risks sometime, right? And I do think it's more of a risk. I think people around the league would say that. I don't know if people in Sacramento say it enough. It is. I mean, the reality is it is. Because if Victor Wembanyama turns into the player that I think we all think he can and the Spurs are competing for championships, what's that look like? Now, are the Kings one of the worst teams in the NBA? Then it's just, there's so much like we just don't know. But there is some risk involved. And by the way, one more thing on that.
What?
I can't believe the Spurs were able to get that done. Like those assholes. We're giving you.
Yeah.
You're an HB. Yes. You're going to have Victor. And you're like, yeah. If we're going to make this happen, we need a pick swap.
That's what 7 years doing out. Right now, though.
And you know, like the Monty and the Kings playing.
They got another one from Minnesota, cares? Too.
Yes.
Yeah. So, no. It's. We're defining it as risk. Like, no shit, right? Like, you have to take risks now you want them to be calculated risks to obviously make your team better. But at the same time, if you look at the track record of this Sacramento Kings organization over the years, when losing comes into play, changes are being made. So you might as well make it way down the list so then you can try and see a lot of that success right away when you're actually there. I mean, I'm kind of joking, but at the same time, I'm like, no, it's about now. It's about doing things, the right things around Domas and De'Aaron, especially when they're in their prime, if you want to call it that.
But also, you can't have it both ways. And I'm not just talking from the Kings fan perspective. I'm talking from the NBA perspective. Everyone's saying the Kings have to make a move now. The West is crazy. The Kings have to make an upgrade. You don't just make an upgrade without some element of risk to it. Now, the other two moves that the Kings were heavily rumored in, Brandon Ingram, Lauri Markkanen, we're talking about multiple first-round picks outright being part of that deal. I mean, I heard as many as 4 first-round picks, not including pick swaps, as part of the Lauri Markkanen deal, if that ever had a chance, and the Sacramento Kings made an offer of that. So this is a move that you've added a 6-time All-Star, and you've done so without trading away your treasure trove of assets that you have, so you can make another move on top of this. So a pick swap in 2031, maybe 6 years from now, I'm doing a podcast on how, you know, in hindsight, that sucked. But I think I'm going to be able to get over it knowing the Kings just added one of the best players they've ever added in any kind of free agency scenario. And this team has now strengthened their opportunity to actually make a legitimate push in the Western Conference that is brutal every single night.
You're still going to be locked on or in 6 years, huh?
7.
Hey,
I'm still breathing.
That's like 7, right?
20, I mean,
that's 7 years from now.
Matt will be doing it in some sort of form, so he will be talking about it. And I could just picture Matt on that day being like, "What were they thinking? How dare they do such a thing?" And then we go back to this podcast and have to show you that 7 years ago that you were actually calm, cool, and collect about it.
You gave up a pick swap for an old man?
A 35-year-old
old man?
Yes. Yeah. But here's the other angle to all of this, though, you guys. When it was talked about with the Keegan Murray angle and the fit. Now, I thought when this person brought that up within voting for this is one of the worst moves and bringing up that angle, I was like, that is a fair opinion. That is a fair analysis of what is it going to look like with DeMar DeRozan in this fit? What is it going to mean for Keegan Murray? And I keep telling dudes I don't know. I feel like I can't really predict what it's going to look like because we saw Keegan Murray in his rookie year just shoot lights out, be aggressive, catch and shoot situations. And then year two, it's like he became such a big two-way player that you saw his shooting numbers go down, but also he's passive at times. So I guess with this, are we going to see a world where Keegan Murray is empowered to be more aggressive on the offensive end because there is a leader like DeMar DeRozan out there.
I think it's on him.
Okay.
Sorry, Frank.
No, you're good. I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah, I think it's a very equal opportunity offense, and I think that this would have been an issue no matter who they would have added. They clearly needed to add talent, but Keegan needs to recognize his moment sometimes and just be like, I'm rolling right now. And, you know, come set the screen for me. I'm not making that extra pass. And I think that that's a mentality thing that he has to grow out of. And I think that we were already at that point last year. There were games where the fan base is talking about, why did this guy get uninvolved after a really good first half? And from my perspective, like I said, it's an equal opportunity offense. You have to go and get yours and recognize your moment. And I think that that's a learning experience for Keegan in general. And it could have been DeMar. It could have been Lauri Markkanen. It could have been Kyle Kuzma. But just because somebody else has more of a, for lack of a better word, and I don't like this wording, like alpha mindset, I guess, doesn't mean anything on Keegan in my mind. It doesn't change what he needs to get better at. And I think that we've seen DeMar play the B roll to Kobe White hitting a game winner in Chicago, you know? So I think that DeMar is willing to be that, but it's on Keegan to take that step and embrace that mentality when he is rolling.
Yeah. And also, like you said, it's going to be about taking what you give him. And there are times where Keegan maybe kind of will have to revert back to his rookie yourself and be a guy that can move off ball and be a spot up shooter. And my kind of response to that is that so bad? I mean, we've seen the strides he's taking on the defensive end. There are going to be nights where De'Aaron's going to be getting his 30 plus, DeRozan's going to be getting his 25 plus. Keegan might be feeling it from three. And again, like to your point, Brendan, there might be nights where he's feeling it and they should make it a point to run through him, because De'Aaron Fox and DeMar DeRozan and Malik Monk, they're not going to be locked in every single night. The game of basketball is a team sport. Harrison Barnes, when we were in Golden State, scored 39 points and the Kings had to run their offense through him. So there's going to be times, but I think the thing with Keegan, he needs to be vocal. He needs to be someone who says, okay, this is year three. This is not a growing process anymore. I am trying to become an all-star caliber player at this level. And I personally think he has the ability to become an all-star caliber player, but it's not really up to me or any of us in this, you know, in this chat here. It's up to him. So if he wants to take that initiative, take that next step, he's going to have to learn from the guys that are around him, Malik Monk, De'Aaron Fox, DeMar DeRozan, because when they're feeling it, they're not going to be passive. So why should he?
And I think, Matt, I was going to say too, like for Keegan, I think this makes his life a bit easier too. I think there was a lot of pressure on him last year to take a step. I think because of the summer league stuff and maybe there was some hype going into the year. I personally think like I'm not worried about the shooting stuff. He showed me enough last year in the mid-range game, more of his attacking. How many times in his rookie year he got blocked on at the rim? That didn't happen as often. And then the step he took defensively. Well, now I just think the addition of DeMar DeRozan makes life easier for De'Aaron, obviously. But even Keegan Murray, I think Keegan's going to get some better looks. And to Frankie's point, like, if Keegan's getting some great looks and he's being efficient and he's scoring 15, 17 a night and playing great defense, the Kings are going to be in a really, really good spot, I think, as a team. So I'm not necessarily worried that like DeMar is going to be like, I need to take shots. I think he's adaptable to different situations, Matt.
Yeah, and going back to just, I mean, this whole ranking system or whatever, the article about why they think that this is a bad move for the Sacramento Kings or one of the worst moves of the offseason. Just looking at the Keegan Murray aspect, while I think it's fair, I also think you're trying hard to find something wrong with it, because at worst, Keegan Murray is an elite wing defender who can shoot 40% from three-point range and space the floor, when one of the biggest questions about the addition of DeMar DeRozan is spacing. Okay, well, now you have an elite wing that is capable of shooting from anywhere on the floor.
At 6'9".
And it can go off for 45 if he wants to, or hit 6 threes and a half and not really bat an eye. I agree with Frankie and Brennan 100% about him needing to be more assertive. That's something that drove me crazy last season, is when he'd get off to a red-hot start in the first quarter and then score 6 points the rest of the game. And that, some of that's on the Kings, some of that's on him, yeah, of course. But I don't see a scenario where adding a talent like DeMar DeRozan is a bad thing. The Sacramento Kings aren't in a position where they can wait. And I'm not saying they have to wait for Keegan Murray at all to develop him, but the Kings need to win right now, need to strike right now. And if Keegan's not ready to make the leap, remember this time last season, I think Monty did an interview with The Athletic. And one of the things he said verbatim in The Athletic was, we expect or we're looking for Keegan to take another jump offensively. He kind of did that. He showed his ability to score more at the rim and from the mid-range a little bit more. But if a 3-and-D wing, an elite-level 3-and-D wing, is what he can be for this Kings team, that's what they've been searching for 20 years. So you've got that. And I also think the addition of DeMar DeRozan, he's now working with someone every day. We talk about last summer how good Keegan got just from working with De'Aaron every day. How good can Keegan get working on his mid-range game with an isolation scorer like DeMar DeRozan, who said it in an interview with ABC 10, he said in an interview with multiple people, he loves the idea of paying back to the game of basketball by coming to Sacramento, helping them win off the or on the court, but also being a leader and a mentor for younger guys. I can see him filling that role with Keegan.
Yeah.
The one thing I would add, sorry, Mo, quick, is that I do think offensively it makes Keegan's life easier.
Yeah.
But, and I know I was just saying Harrison has not been a good defender. He still does have size, and he's the guy that you're putting on Braun,
yes,
for example. It puts more pressure on Keegan defensively in this trade. And like you said, Matt, talking about him like elite 3-and-D, I'm still, I might be a little behind you on that. Like I'm still waiting for it to be more proven over time defensively, but I think there's been progress specifically on a lot of guards defensively.
Yeah.
But now you're going to ask him to be on these primary forwards. If you play Philly, he's going to be on Paul George, or if you play LA, he's going to be on LeBron, or he's going to be on Kawhi Leonard. And that's a little bit different. And I do think that often he's going to get the primary assignment defensively. I think the other side of the defense, though, is that I think that we're going to see De'Aaron take another jump. Also, it's practically a contract year for this guy. I think he's going to absolutely ball out on both ends of the floor. And DeMar's offense will make his defense take another step. But it makes offense easier for Keegan. But I do think they're going to need to ask more defensively from him.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And that's going to be the fascinating element, because when we still look at the Kings, right? The DeMar DeRozan acquisition didn't fix all their weaknesses. And I think that's one element that people look at and they go, yeah, but they still need more size. They need this. Yeah, but as people and fans have seen, like, the Kings had offensive issues last year, especially once Monk went down, no Kevin Huerter. You're looking around going, who the hell's creating on this team? It was De'Aaron Fox. And there was no other consistency from anybody else after that point. So you need another guy to help offensively. But the size perspective is going to be a thing that gets brought up. And
It is. But, like, I mean, we were just talking about this the other day, too, how Brad Stevens was talking about how, you know, positionless basketball can be. And you look at...
It's matchups.
It's 100% matchups. But you do look around the league and you look at some of these rosters and... I was telling Deuce this the other day. Like, I would laugh in the face of Minnesota, you know, thinking two bigs was going to work, and it's starting to work. Now, obviously, their goal is to win a championship with how much they are putting into this roster. But I guess my point is, it's like, you can definitely try different things in this league, but I think one of the main things that we are seeing from a lot of teams is kind of like what we're talking about, is having guys that aren't going to be a liability on one end of the floor or the other, are guys that have the length out there. So if they are put on, you know, it is still a mismatch, they're capable because of other things that they have. Maybe it's size. Maybe they're not the best individual defenders. So yeah, you know what I mean?
And I think to that point, too, you know, DeMar, and I'm doing like a film breakdown. We're doing a film breakdown DeMar DeRozan next week. And I really want to look at this angle of it. You know, he played some power forward. I know it seems crazy. He played some power forward in Chicago and San Antonio. And I think there are times, we talk about Keegan at times being better against guards. We've seen that against like Steph and Donovan Mitchell, other matchups. DeMar actually defends better, it seems like, against some of those bigger guys. And so I'm excited to look at that, because I wonder if that's an option. It seems crazy, and I'm not saying he's going to go out there and defend Karl Anthony Towns, but maybe there are some matchups at the four where you go, you know, we don't want Keegan on that guy. We'll put DeMar DeRozan out there. I don't know. Does that seem crazy?
I mean, regardless, though, the Sacramento Kings defense is a very switch heavy, help heavy defense.
Right.
That's like naturally what Mike and that's what they try and do is they're going to switch and they're going to try and help and they're going to try and scramble on every single possession. So regardless of like you might try and match up in a one-on-one isolation setting down the stretch. If you're playing the Golden State Warriors, you can still put Keegan on Steph at that point. Or if it's the Lakers, you can put Keegan on LeBron or you can put DeMar on LeBron in those specific scenarios. But most of the time, the Kings are going to be reading and reacting defensively like they always do. And the more versatile talent you have out there that's able to read and react, the better. Now, one of my things about this offseason was I thought the Kings needed to add more size. And unfortunately, they actually got smaller. They traded away one of their bigger wings to bring in a 6'6 DeMar DeRozan. The concern that I have with that, in addition to how will officials officiate the game, because both De'Aaron and Mike have said that's what allowed the Kings to play better defense down the stretch, is because they stopped calling so many fouls. But the Kings were lit up from the perimeter all season long, to where Mike at one point had to teach basic fundamentals of closeouts, which is crazy to even talk about. But and I don't think it was necessarily an issue of the Kings not trying to close out on the perimeter. I just think it's easier to shoot over a 6'6 dude and a 6'5 dude, or and sorry, like Davion Mitchell's case, a 6'1 dude, than it is to shoot over 6'8, 6'9, 6'10, which is what we saw New Orleans have a lot of success with. So defensively, it's all still kind of up in the air for the Kings, and I didn't expect Keegan or DeMar or any one person to really look to fix that.
It and really quick, I mean, I agree, Matt, like it's definitely easier to obviously shoot over a shorter person and everything, but I also think like when you look at the concept, the team defense, and if you execute that to a way that it's like becomes your specialty together as a team. There's so much you can accomplish together out there. It doesn't matter. I mean, when I say it doesn't matter your size, obviously there's going to be certain matchups like it really does matter, right? Like you can't just double big because they have some other guys out along the perimeter that can shoot the ball. But you're right. The art form of a closeout was taught last year, but maybe it can be perfected in such a different way because the defense is going to take a leap because we saw improvements throughout it, especially what it ended with 14th.
14th in defensive rating.
I think they were even 9th post All-Star.
Okay. Yeah. So, and again, I think sometimes like I become optimistic about Mike Brown, his defensive strategy,
Morgan,
and what he can do as a
the
coach.
The fact that they got this Kings team based on the personnel that they have,
the personnel, 14th that's
in
why.
Defensive rating last year is kind of stunning.
I don't know. It gives me hope.
Should we buy that? Like, because you look Hell at this yes. roster, and it does scream that they should be bad defensively.
But wait, this one right now?
I think so.
Well,
I like Keon Ellis. I like Keegan defensively.
But De'Aaron,
those three guys.
De'Aaron, I, you're right. You're right.
I mean, but that's like, three.
I mean, really, honestly, it comes down to Sabonis. Your most important defensive position is the big
say it, Deuce. Oh yes. Say it, Deuce. Really I know not. What Deuce is gonna say right now.
God. Oh boy.
You guys, dude,
Matt, tell the son of a bitch.
Tell him.
Okay, Frankie, are you laughing at me? Are you laughing at me? Or are you laughing at Brendan?
Frankie, who are you laughing at?
I'm laughing at everything.
Frankie,
I just want to hear what you're gonna say.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
If I have to hear one more thing about Sabonis' defense, guy plays hard. Every night. He's not long. We know this.
I play
He's,
hard. I'm not a
good
defender. Shut
up, Brendan. We're not talking about you.
I don't think. I don't. I'm going to say hot take from Deuce. I don't think Sabonis is a bad defender. I think
he's not.
He's an max effort guy. He's just not long. He's not blocking shots. But the last time I checked.
Last time.
Defensive rebounding matters.
Say it.
If you get a stop, you don't get to, you have to get the ball.
You just stop the play.
It's the most
and the
important
possession.
Thing. And the possession. He's better than anybody in the league
what
at
if,
doing that.
What if they don't miss because you didn't contest very well?
Well, no shit, Brendan. There's going to be games where like Orlando Magic make every goddamn three okay. that they take.
But here,
I'm just saying, Domas has his value, but I really, and I hate to be this guy, I think that we're going to get to this conversation at some
Your
point.
Your Bay Area-ness is showing.
I think I've said this to you
I love
before,
seeing right? Matt, too,
but
just like
I do
take
think
it in.
At some point, we're going to have a conversation about the defense has a ceiling because Domas is a centerpiece.
Well, I mean, here's the reality. You just talked about after the All-Star break, they were ninth. That featured Harrison Barnes and Sabonis. Like,
it wasn't luck.
I mean, I think Sabonis moved better last year. It's not perfect. There's going to be some matchups from a center spot that, like, all right, like Jokic, he's going to struggle with some bigger guys. He might struggle with sometimes. But I think that's on the Kings to surround him with some more size. And that's why we're talking about the size thing, to help him out. Because I think that was the issue. We go back to Harrison Barnes. Harrison Barnes' defensive issues may not be noticed as much in San Antonio when you have Victor Wembanyama, who is already one of the best defensive players in the league after one season. Sabonis, I think his limitations have more to do with just like his pure size than anything. Like, he's not the longest guy. I think he competes out there. He's physical. He rebounds. I thought he was better in the pick and roll coverage last year.
And it's not like he tries. Oh, he tries hard. It's like, no, he works hard and gets shit done, though. You know, like, just looking at those defensive rebounds. And that's, I mean, like, there are facts there. And I think sometimes when we go by, because I definitely believe in the eye test and everything, but like, I think sometimes when we look around the league, that is how he is judged, when it's like, okay, well, then go to his stats. Even De'Aaron, I know a lot of people don't think some of the best defenders get a shit ton of steals and everything, but I mean, he led the league in steals last year.
And near the top in deflections.
Yeah. And so I don't know. I just think there's so much more there, especially under another year of Mike Brown. I just think that it can come together even more. My opinion.
He's not a traditional rim protector. And I feel like a lot of people that don't watch the Kings every day, I mean, they pop in and they see that, you know, Sabonis is the last line of defense that the Kings have. You know, he's the five down there in the post. Guys on the perimeter are getting blown by, and your last line of defense is Sabonis, who is not a rim protector. He's a great defensive rebounder.
Yeah.
Not a player in the NBA that's a very defensive rebounder. But I do think the Kings benefit from having a guy who can block shots and protect the rim? Sure, but those guys don't just grow on trees.
But like, Frankie, but like, now they're having guys that are getting better and better on ball, and Keon and De'Aaron, who are obviously getting, I mean, even Keegan's gotten better on ball.
100%. And that's like kind of the point. It's like, if you're, you know, the top, if you're backcourt and the guys that can, you know, in front can defend better and refrain from having those situations take place that we see time and time again, and again, De'Aaron Fox and Keon Ellis, specifically De'Aaron, who took a big step last year, was not a revolving door. There wasn't really a revolving door as much as we've seen in previous years of guards getting into the paint and getting comfortable. You don't have to worry about that as much if you have Keegan Murray, Keon Ellis, De'Aaron Fox. If DeRozan can buy in and be a better defender than Harrison Barnes, that remains to be seen. We don't know if that's going to happen or not. But if those other four can step up, it takes pressure off Sabonis and takes eyeballs off of him and people looking at him as a weak spot. When, again, like you guys are pointing out, he's the best defensive rebounder in the entire league, and he steals offensive rebounds from people every game. So it is kind of like a conundrum, sure. But I think I look more at what Sabonis can do for you than what he can't. And he's not a rim protector. That's fine. But look at all the things he can do. Initiate offense, run the break, run the offense off the elbow, like run it out of the post, wherever he wants. He can do whatever he wants with the basketball anytime. And I know that the guys, mostly the national people, are going to look at Sabonis and focus on what he cannot do, but I think it really shouldn't be that simple.
Domantas Sabonis also plays for a defensive-minded head coach in Mike Brown, who has basically said blocked shots don't mean shit because blocked shots don't guarantee a change of possession. Defensive rebounds and finishing a defensive possession are what are way more important to Mike Brown. Again, a defensive-focused head coach who values how Domantas Sabonis can end a possession by rebounding better than literally anybody else in the league for 2 years running. On top of that, Domantas Sabonis has fallen victim to the same thing that when DeMarcus Cousins had issues with it. You go through the list of NBA centers who have played in Sacramento over the last 15 years. Now, all of them have been good defenders. Many of them have been bad defenders, but they all fall victim to the fact that the Sacramento Kings typically on the perimeter have been a revolving door. Like, the Kings
is Sam Dallenberg the best shot blocker the Kings have had over the last 15, 20 years?
Shout out him and Keon Clark, baby.
So if the Sacramento Kings had Jarrett Allen instead of Domantas Sabonis right now, would they be a better basketball team? Absolutely not. I'd go as far as to say if Rudy Gobert were on this Kings team, would they be a better basketball team? No, because the entire foundation of who the Sacramento Kings are runs through Domantas Sabonis.
What about Bam Adebayo?
I don't think Bam Adebayo is nearly as good of a rebounder or passer as Domantas Sabonis.
Okay,
is.
But like, how often are we talking about good defenders and people are really mentioning their rebounding?
Well, and
I'm not saying it's nothing,
not enough. But that, like,
that's
we
the thing,
are
Brandon.
Kind of nitpicking here, no?
No, and Brandon, I think your larger point is a fair one, right? Is like, if we're talking about the end goal of building a team is to compete for championships, it's hard to do. And if the question is, can you win a championship if Sabonis is your center? I think, and what's your defensive ceiling? Is that going to be good enough to be in championship contention? I think it's a fair question. I think if you have Sabonis on your team, it is vital that you surround him with the type of versatility defensively that you can maybe cover up for the weaknesses, just like you cover up for weaknesses of other players, right? So I think that is fair. I don't think the defensive rebounding gets talked actually enough. I think we should talk about it more because I do think it matters. That's how you end a possession. You get a rebound, and he is not the perfect player, as Frankie said.
Yeah.
But I think he does so much good out there. It's on the front office. Like, how can you find that perfect piece? You know, I don't know who that is. I don't know what that is. People, you know,
I feel like that piece is really rare though, and that's what are we looking? Well, we're looking for a stretch four that also protects the paint. And yeah. I feel like there's like maybe five guys in the league that really do that, you know?
And I mean, I think having someone that has length, that can defend, and yeah, block a shot would be nice. I mean, even someone, it's interesting. I was talking to Morgan about this yesterday, about Jalen McDaniels a little bit, because Jalen had like the worst year of all years last year. And I'm curious, like, what kind of plans they have for him. Like, was it purely like, hey, we'll just take a swing on it, he's an expiring contract? But I was joking with Morgan about how, like, I feel like the first 2 years under Mike Brown, we've seen like weird lineups. Like, it was all of a sudden KZ Akpala, right? It was like, oh, KZ is gonna be in the starting lineup. Like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Duarte became a
Chris Duarte, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, God, we keep talking about like the shooting guard battle. What happens if they go, yeah, we'll put Keegan as shooting guard, McDaniels is starting because we need someone with length and size. Obviously, I'm not saying Jalen McDaniels is like an answer anything, but like you, when you think about like the attributes you need in terms of like the length, 6'9", long, you're like, God, that's, you just need someone that can contribute at that level. That's why I brought up even like a Robert Covington as like a vet to bring in potentially. I don't know. You're right. What the Kings are searching for.
Something that we're looking at those guys for a clear hole, though.
Yeah.
So
well,
what's the alternative? Get rid of Domantas Sabonis and hope you get Bam out of bio?
No, I'm not saying it's an alternative.
But,
I'm just saying there is a clear.
But people present these issues with Domantas Sabonis and have no solution because the solution doesn't exist. There's only one player in the league that does what Domas does better. His name's Nikola Jokic, a three-time MVP.
For sure.
He's the only guy. Joel Embiid is phenomenal as well. Domantas Sabonis actually plays all 82 games. Joel Embiid just got 0 minutes for Team USA the other night. Not that Domantas or Sabonis would play a single minute for Team USA.
Killing Embiid didn't even make the Olympics, but you know.
And it's so funny too because I thought we stood up for Domas and then like have Matt George on the show. Oh, yeah, and it's like, wow. I appreciate your talking points, Matt, because I think I think there's so much truth to it, especially one. I mean, we can go down the line like it's Sacramento. Everyone wants to shit on Sacramento. Even push that out of the way. It's like what this guy is doing when it comes to the stat sheets, what this guy is doing when it comes to winning basketball, right? Yeah. Like obviously last year, just because they didn't make the playoffs. I mean, you look at the Western Conference and the leap the entire conference took. It's going to be difficult to win in this league at times. And I get that, like, well, that's the point of the NBA, like win a championship, you know, Monty, do your job. Everyone do your goddamn job. I totally understand that. But at the same time, like I'm with you. When you see a special style of basketball player and that is kind of the direction you want to go, you like go with it. Keep trying. And then there's going to come a point, like we said, like, can you not win a championship with Domas Sabonis? And if you get to that point, then you make the changes, the necessary changes.
I think my perspective is like, Brendan, my expectations aren't that they're a championship team all of a sudden, right? Like,
for sure.
To me, it's like this team had so many bad years the fact that they won 48 games and 46 games, you know, in the last 2 years, that to me is progress. And it's like, I know everyone, hey, have higher expectations. Yeah, I just want to build, like, let's get to the playoffs a few years in a row. Let's see if they can win a series and continue to tinker. And that's a challenge. Winning a championship is hard. Being in championship contention is hard. We see how quickly it fades away for teams. It changes fast. It wasn't that long ago the Suns were winning 60-plus games with Chris Paul and, you know, Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges, and Booker.
Yeah.
The team is a completely different team now. So, obviously, things can change fast in this league. I look at where the Kings are at now, and I go, you know what? I think from a ceiling perspective, could I close my eyes and envision them being a 4 seed in the West? I think I could see that this year, even with their flaws.
A little optimistic for me.
I could also see them being like a 9 seed. The West is just insane. Sure. You know, and I think my expectations are like, I like this guy has helped them win, and this looks like it can be a thing that lasts a little bit. Let's keep building it.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50. In order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today. If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy. In order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
To speak to the Sabonis thing again, as far as you mentioned the 48 and 46 wins, who not named Harrison Barnes played in the most games after that? It's Domantas Sabonis. And that's something I think that Brendan and I have talked about a lot, or and Chris and I for sure, Chris Watkins and I have talked about. the kind of scary thing is, what does this team look like? And knock on wood, if Sabonis missed time,
why would you bring that up? My
point is how valuable he is. Yeah. To me, I think he's the most valuable player on the Kings, because I think that nothing against De'Aaron Fox or Keegan Murray, DeRozan, any of those guys, but we've seen what Malik Monk can do when he's, you know, in a microwave like form. When he wants to go get buckets and be a guy that can be a game setter, a game breaker, whatever you want to have. De'Aaron Fox, Malik Monk, DeMar DeRozan, you have guys that can go out there and just get you just straight buckets. You don't have another player, especially a big, that can go out there and control the glass. And by control, I mean dominate, run the offense. I think he was top five in assists last year as a center. I think everybody else was a guard, and maybe LeBron was in there too. I'm not sure. But that's why I think that he is, you can't replicate it. You can't. I think he missed a game last year and they're in Los Angeles. And I was thinking, how are they going to fill that hole? Rashawn Holmes filled in after sitting, I think, in DNP CDs for the whole year to that point. Rashawn plays in LA, has 22 and 10 and like 5 assists. Those numbers seem a little familiar, do they not? I mean, he literally had his best game of the year. Sabonis-esque. Sabonis comes back, you know, business as usual. But I think he's undervalued in a lot of ways. And I don't think by Kings fans by any means. I think Kings fans out there, I think they know. Like, Domantas Sabonis is what makes this team really go. He sets the tone on offense. Obviously, De'Aaron is very valuable too. But I think that Domantas Sabonis, what he's done over the past 2 years, He's been that piece. Like you're talking about, Deuce, 48, 46 wins. I mean, where would they be without him? And I just don't know if they'd be anywhere near where they are now without his impact.
One of my favorite Sabonis stats from last year is after January 1st, he led the NBA in rebounds and led the NBA in assists.
Shit.
It's kind of crazy.
It is.
Kind of crazy.
Not bad.
Matt, in terms of ceiling, what's the ceiling for this group? I mean, I know another trade could happen or something like that, but I don't know. I think we're kind of looking at this squad and going, yeah, this may be what it is going. Maybe a few, you know, a training camp deal or minimum deal, whatever. But as we look at this team as it stands, what's the ceiling for this group in the West?
See, when thinking about a question like that, my brain instantly goes to playoff seeding in the West, and maybe it shouldn't. Maybe it should go to win totals, which is, to me, this season is all about breaking that 50 threshold.
Ooh, I love
which
it.
Which is a number that the Kings set for themselves last year. And I think Mike Brown said at one time, like, the best teams in the league are winning minimum 50 games.
Yeah.
So breaking the 50 win threshold is the expectation. It's not the ceiling. It's the expectation for this team.
And I like that, because you win 50 games, you're in a good spot. You're in the top six. Right. If you win 50
you're top
games.
Six. Correct. And at that point, then I think it kind of depends on how the rest of the West shakes out. And to me, the biggest thing to winning 50 games this season isn't just how they match up with Denver and with OKC and with Minnesota. It's how they handle the Wednesday night game in March against Detroit. It's how they handle the Monday afternoon game on the East Coast against Charlotte. Those are the games that the Kings dropped that were the difference between 46 and 49 or 50 wins last season, which means the play-in wouldn't even have been a conversation, even with Kevin Huerter and Malik Monk out. So, and that I can even take that a step further too, in looking at De'Aaron Fox specifically, because I expect, like Brendan said, a massive year from him. I had a conversation with Luke Laux at De'Aaron's basketball camp that all three of us were at covering, and Luke was saying, man, De'Aaron's going to be incredible this year. And because of the mindset that De'Aaron has, both with the contract, and I think De'Aaron also recognizes the disappointment of last season too, but we know De'Aaron can start strong and average 30 points to start the season. He did it last year. We know he can finish strong, and when he gets into the playoffs, he can play really well. He had one of the best scoring debuts in playoff history. What does he look like in January, February, March, when he's banged up and he's taking threes instead of going to the rack because he doesn't want to get clubbed over the head every single time and not get to the foul line? That's the next step for De'Aaron, and I think that's the next step for the Kings as a whole.
Matt, one thing to that, because agree with all of that, but what I will challenge you on, because we talked about this last night too, was De'Aaron, when he does get banged up, we go, yo, I know you can play. I know you can play. Sit the fuck out. Like, sit down.
And especially please. Now you have DeMar DeRozan.
Exactly. Because you have to recharge your body. You're literally, one of your best skill sets is being the fastest player in the league. And if you are not that explosive and not that fast because you are too banged up, like, take a chill pill and thank you so much for wanting to be out there. But like, you need to be your best because that is what this team, the style of basketball this team needs from you. But yes, but agree.
Well, he's got to play 65 though.
Yeah.
To meet the limit. And Brendan. You don't know if something's going to happen in the future.
Brendan.
I genuinely think though too, like the high volume of 3-point shots came from De'Aaron having a new confidence in that three that Luke has helped him develop. I also think it's a tactical decision. Like genuinely, I don't think De'Aaron feels the need to go amongst the paint and in the rim and get clobbered as much as he does. Maybe he should learn from Shea Gilgeous-Alexander a little bit of how to sell a foul a little bit more, even though De'Aaron said, that's not my game. I don't do stuff like that. But like, I think it's tactical to take more threes to also keep himself out of the line of fire a little bit. The problem was last season, if De'Aaron was taking a high volume of threes, the Kings had no like mid-range presence. They didn't. And that's where he was the mid-range merchant two years ago when he won Clutch Player of the Year. Now you have DeMar DeRozan here. So De'Aaron can get away with shooting 7-8 threes a game on a regular basis because DeMar is probably going to get 5 or 6 shots in the mid-range too. That might even open up even more space for Fox.
And he shot 37% from three last year. So he could.
On high volume.
I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that. Brendan, where are you at with the ceiling for this group as it stands? You heard Matt, the goal should be 50. Where are you at?
I don't like that look on your face.
I love it. I mean, he's going to come like realistic.
I feel like effing negative Nancy on this. You're not. All the time. Well, I feel like Matt. Brendan. Yeah, I know. Matt had us on a round table last year, and I think I refused to give an A plus.
Did he have us on?
McNair? No, you gave him. You barely A-. gave him an A minus. You talked yourself into an A minus.
I gave him an A minus, and eventually Monty.
You want to give him a B.
May have talked to me and was like, hey, I heard you. I gave you a bad grade. And I'm like, listen, I just didn't want to give you the plus. Okay, relax.
First playoff appearance in nearly 2 decades.
Celtic perspective over here. We can't all be good all the time.
There's a lot of times where I'm not sure that the previous context should matter, but also I understand that I'm an outsider and blah, blah, blah. But I think that Matt's ceiling is fine. I think that my whole standpoint is that there's a very wide range in my mind of the ceiling and the floor. And I have no clue where they're going to land in that. But I genuinely think the ceiling is like, we could be talking about conference finals here. You know, I think that there is a lot of talent on this team and that they're essentially getting back to their strengths that they had in the year prior, where they were the best offense in the league. And then they dropped down to, I believe it's like top 10 still in the year prior. And they were elite in the clutch. And that's exactly what DeMar DeRozan is going to do for this team. If you can't defend, but you can keep up, you can make sure that you can close games, you're in an okay spot, but you're kind of flipping a coin a little bit in those scenarios. So I do think that there's a world where, you know, the year that Portland made conference finals, like I think there's a world where that happens. But I think there's also the lower end where they're kind of fighting in the play-in.
Yes.
Because I do have a lot of defensive questions with this team, but if everything clicks and works out right where De'Aaron is a great defender. Keon Ellis takes a jump where he's a respectable offensive player, even though I have questions about, like, I think he's actually going to be in opposing defensive game plans this year. So I wonder what the offense is going to look like from him because obviously the defense is already there. And then Keegan's defense, like it's all there's a lot of question marks to me, but I think best outcome possible, could be talking about conference finals here.
It's real, like you acting like you're negative Nancy. Like, okay, I know. Like,
I'm just saying.
My God.
Well, I think what Brendan's saying too is
the West is wide open.
Yeah, I was saying 3/4 of the West. There's the top of the West, which I think is like OKC, Minnesota, Dallas, and Denver, maybe. And then everybody else is just kind of open season.
Are we missing anyone?
No, I think that's it. I'm with you, Matt. Those are the four teams to me that you go today as it stands. Like, yeah, these four teams are better than Sacramento. And obviously that could change throughout the season. I'm a little lower on Denver right now. I don't love their offseason. I don't think they got better. I mean, they still have Jokic, so they're going to be a threat. They're going to be tough. They got guys, but you look around going, you just lost KCP. This is a year after losing Bruce Brown, and they expected some young guys to take a jump that did not take a jump. They like literally gave Reggie Jackson and 3 second round picks and got nothing in return. Their lone move really was getting what? Westbrook and
which makes
Darius Arch. Yeah. So like I'm not totally, but I also go, look, dude, I watching Serbia playing in the Olympics. I'm going, when Jokic is on the floor, they're going to be in it. Yep. Like, and that's the reality. But I don't know. I just look at the West, Frank, and I'm like, how many teams can you say are legitimately better than Sacramento? I think those four.
To me, those four. I mean, I think people might make an argument for Phoenix, and I get it.
True. The Tyus Jones move was nice. That was a really good pickup for them.
That was a little frustrating, I think, from a Kings perspective, that you know you're going to take less money and go play with. I mean, you can probably
you wanted back, another I guard.
A little frustrating from a Kings perspective.
I disagree, Frankie. Hold on, Frankie, you son of a.
Yeah, you would have complained.
Tyus
no,
Jones.
No.
He's starting in Phoenix. He's starting in Phoenix.
We're missing. Yeah, Jordan McLaughlin in studio. Hold by on. The way, don't be disrespectful.
Miscommunication. I'm not saying the Kings should have signed him. I'm saying frustrating from a Kings perspective as far as he took less money
He
went and signed with a division rival or foe, whatever you want to call him.
Yeah.
Not that the Kings should sign Tyus Jones. No, that's not what I meant. Tyus Jones. If the Kings wouldn't have had McLaughlin, a different conversation. But I do think that the four you guys named.
I'm going to put Phoenix ahead of him now. Yeah. Now that you say it, I will.
I think there's an argument that the Kings are maybe even or right below them because we saw Phoenix last year and the Kings had them beat.
You remember that fourth quarter? You remember that fourth quarter?
Which one?
Yeah. Right. That's true.
Right. So yeah,
we know which one. It was disgusting.
I think there was three.
A new coaching staff too. You never know.
Where they benched Domas for his defense, by the way.
Ooh. Yeah.
Well, just saying.
Okay.
So I'm putting Phoenix above, but go on.
Slightly.
There were three games that the Kings had leads against Phoenix in the fourth quarter. Of course, there was a 20-point lead with like 8 minutes left. But then there was other games they led with like a few minutes left. But I think that those 4/5 teams, that's why I'm kind of saying my ceiling for the Kings, or I guess my floor, I think I'd be pretty surprised if them finish lower than 6. Maybe that's crazy. Maybe the West is going to be a total buzzsaw.
Yeah.
But I think where the Kings are compared this year compared to last year. Last year, they won 46 games. They lost so many games in the last couple of moments, and especially at the free throw line, dead last in free throw shooting. The DeMar DeRozan signing could help them a little bit, 85%, one of the best free throw shooters in the NBA. But how many games did we watch last year? The Kings lost it. I mean, obviously the Milwaukee game, there's more and more games like that. But yeah. I also think the health thing, I think if the Kings have a healthy Malik Monk down the final stretch, mm-hmm. they plot a couple more wins, and I think they needed two to avoid the play-in. I'd like to think so, but if you have health, health will be very important. Having a healthy De'Aaron Fox, like we've all talked about, it's going to be a big year for him. Pretty much a contract year for him. He wants that supermax. Domantas Sabonis, I just mentioned how I think he's the most valuable player on the Kings. If he misses any time, how will they replicate that? They probably can't. And DeRozan, how is he going to be at age 35? He's been pretty fine in the past, but can we expect that this year? I mean, we've seen NBA players, they're kind of having more longevity to their careers now. You see more guys make it past 34, 35 than we used to 5-6 years ago. Can he be impactful like he was in Chicago? And Malik Monk, certainly not least, and Keegan Murray. You have a lot of guys that can be there and be difference makers. Yeah. Health will be important. Kevin Huerter, will he factor in? They have guys. They have a lot of players and a lot of depth. Obviously, they need more length. We'll see if that gets addressed. We have 2 months until training camp. I'd like to imagine that will get addressed. But to me, their ceiling for me is 6th, or their ceiling. Their floor is 6th. Their ceiling to me, Brendan, conference finals, that'd be awesome. I would love to see them just win a playoff series because we saw the playoff drought end. A new drought has been born. They are going on. It'll be 21 years next spring without a playoff series that they've won. Wow. So I'm looking to see them win a first round series.
Man, you said the floor is a 6 seed. The floor.
That's what I think.
Wow.
I
love the optimism. Yeah. And I saw you're Matt crazy. Shaking his head a little bit at the Phoenix thing. And I don't know. Maybe I'm falling too. I'm a prisoner of the moment watching Kevin Durant.
Oh.
With Team USA, like the guy's been disgusting. Even Booker's had some great moments.
They still have 3 Hall of Famers on.
Yeah,
team.
On paper, the Phoenix Suns are supposed to be one of the best teams. In
oh,
the league.
We're just giving Bradley Beal a Hall of Fame induction now.
Maybe not Beal, but like.
But Brendan, how many games
have
they all
three players
play?
Better than any? Well,
but that's the question.
How often are the Kings playing a game where they have the best player on the floor?
I mean, they're. Yeah. I, you know I guess. What I mean? Yeah, I get
it. It depends on the night.
And it
but
does.
It's a team sport.
Good job, it Frankie. It's a team sport, Brendan.
No, but how often are those guys in Phoenix? If you can go ahead and put like the 2K, the health meter, like on 100, no injuries. Yeah. Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant. Yes, Phoenix is a problem. But how rare? I mean, I don't have it in front of me.
I think that's my biggest question too, Frankie, to be honest, because Durant played 70-plus games last year, which is crazy to think about. It's like, is he playing 70-plus next year? you know, Booker was banged up multiple times throughout the year. And of course, Beal's just constantly banged up. So I don't know. I think it's going to be close. But I think the larger point, Matt, is like, you can make a case for a lot of teams to be in that mix with the Kings. You know what I mean? Like, even someone like Memphis, what are they going to look like this year?
Good question. Yeah, I mean, if John Morant stays off of social media, I think they're going to be a really, really dangerous team.
Such a dad thing to say.
That's a team that there's a lot of teams underneath the Sacramento Kings too, or at least standings wise underneath the Sacramento Kings that you also, just as much as you're looking up trying to punch your way up, you also have to be punching down and protecting your ankles a little bit, because like I don't think San Antonio is going to be bad. I don't think
I'm with you.
I think the Golden State Warriors and Los Angeles Lakers are grasping for straws as the window is quickly closing in their face. So the two of them, I'm not super concerned about, but also they have enough talent to make a run if they stay healthy, and a lot of things factor into it. But like that's just the state of the Western Conference, and it's great for us from a media and a fan standpoint. Every time the Kings play a Western Conference opponent, it's going to be must watch, because it could have implications that you feel. Game three against the Clippers could have massive playoff implications, and we have no idea just because of the state of the Western Conference, which I think is fantastic for the NBA. They were concerned 2 or 3 years ago about the regular season not mattering. Now you're in a position where, like I said, any game during this regular season could be a make or break game. We could have a situation again where the fourth seed through the eighth seed are separated by 2 or 3 games, mm-hmm. and tiebreakers matter a lot. Yeah. Not to mention, please God, solve for the in-season tournament. When you get eliminated, some teams play terrible teams multiple or an extra time, while the Kings have to play a good team multiple extra time. Fix that crap.
Matt, you in this whole thing that you're just saying, you mentioned, Deuce asked you about Memphis, and then you mentioned Houston, you mentioned San Antonio. Even if they're not going to be a great team, like they're going to be that annoying team, right? Like,
I think they're going to be good.
Right, yeah. Right. And then you mentioned even the Pelicans. I went into last year going, I don't know what the Pelicans are going to be. Oh, well, they sure kicked the shit out of the Sacramento Kings 6 times.
I'm got that right. My July, end of July hot take right now. You know, I think the Pelicans have bad vibes. I think, you know, the BI thing is hanging over them. And I think they lost some key guys that added to that toughness and Valanciunas.
No. We
and
thought Najee Zion Marshall. was the bad vibes last year.
I'm just telling you right now, I'm out. I'm out. They'll be good, but I'm out.
Okay, Sharks.
It's not the same. And the Warriors. Let me tell you. First, they're all
body buckets.
No way,
man. Nobody.
He dribbles off his foot about 3 times in a game. Everybody's gonna be heated.
I need a close up on Steph Curry's face in game one when Buddy shoots more threes than Steph Curry does. I need a close up of Steph's face.
Will Draymond punch Buddy buckets?
Well, and then
please God.
Other thing, no. I'm watching Team USA today, and I was convinced. I thought I missed something. I thought Seth Curry was out there. It was Steph. I thought it was Seth. Five,
right?
It was Steph Curry out there.
You're getting those dad joke energy. No. Like, what's happening right now?
Okay, so we're talking about all these teams.
Yeah.
But how often, if the Kings were to match up against one of these teams in the play-in, do you really feel confident in it is not like just a coin flip between the two?
Yeah.
Which is a complicated question, because I think single elimination basketball
one game,
is
man.
Yep. in the first place. But
I mean,
none of these teams we've talked about, I'm like confidently saying the Kings are winning that game.
I'm with you. And we also haven't seen this version yet, so it's so tough to say. But like, it's one game. I mean, after the Kings beat the Warriors in that game, I'm going, they're going to beat the. There's no way they're losing to the Pelicans again. Like, that gave them something. Then they got their asses absolutely kicked. Correct. So I don't know. One game is so tough. And that's why, to Matt's point, 50. If you hit that 50 mark, we're not talking about the play-in. Avoid the play-in. And then you're just playing the matchup game. Matchups mean everything come playoff time. And there's no greater example of that than what we just saw in this playoffs, right? Like, I don't think anyone thought, you know, Dallas is going to be going to the NBA Finals. But the matchups worked out. Guys played well. And they got there.
To answer your question too, Brendan, like, in a one-game scenario, literally it is a coin flip. Anything can happen. But I'd sure as heck rather have a roster like the Sacramento Kings have, in the sense that you have at least five guys who at any period in time can go supernova, not to mention, I think Kevin Huerter still has that potential coming off the bench where he could shoot 50% for a month and just be red hot, to where defenses have to constantly be concerned about that. So if the play, I mean, I think personally, I like the floor of the sixth seed that Frankie said, because I think that should be the mindset of the Sacramento Kings. I think making the play-in is disappointing for this group.
You know, Matt, their mindset is championship. Like, 100%. You know.
Yeah. But it ultimately doesn't. If you make the playoffs and win a playoff series, nobody cares how you got there. But I think that the Sacramento Kings feel that they have to play game 83 or game 84 just to make the playoffs. I think they're pretty disappointed based off of how this roster is shaped. And they have the experience of the last two seasons to draw on, too. They know what got them there. They know why they lost in that scenario. They don't even want to put themselves in that position to begin with. So that's how I expect them to operate, is a top six seed is bare minimum expectation.
So I feel like I could talk to you guys for like 3 hours, but you guys committed to like an hour. So I don't want to go that far, but I'm going to leave it like this. I want to ask one more question, and there's other talk. Maybe we'll do this again, and it could be on one of the many podcasts that you guys do.
Ones that you guys do that round tables that we weren't invited to, but no worries.
I'm sorry.
It's all good. Or you could just not respond. But
both
no
Deuce and Mo have been on Locked On Kings individually and together multiple times and on ABC 10 multiple times. I'm sorry. Let's just get that out.
I have been on ABC 10.
Like he's got something to say.
Matt brought out the receipts.
I was feeling the vibes. I was suggesting doing this again because I really enjoyed this.
I'd love to come back on, please.
Shut up, Frankie.
Here, Frankie, I got this. I got this one for you. We'll go around. I want everyone to answer this. What is the one thing or player you're most curious about headed into next year?
I think the topic of De'Aaron Fox and that Supermax, and how we've seen 2 years in a row he's turned down those extensions, and I'm ready to see what contract year De'Aaron Fox looks like. And I know, again, it's not by definition a contract year for him, but this is a year that he can get that Supermax. And we talk about how important Domantas Sabonis is, but De'Aaron Fox is right there too. I mean, he's someone that was expanding his game last year as a three-point shooter. The volume he was at last year and the 37% mark he finished at was really cool to see. The defense, obviously, we talked about number one in the league in steals per game, deflections, he was right there too. I think he's someone that deserved to have an all-star nod, deserved to have an all-NBA nod too, and this year I think he's coming for it. So I think we know what Domantas Sabonis can do. We know what DeMar DeRozan can do if he's comfortable and works in the offense, and that's might be one of your guys' answers, and I kind of fought it over going DeMar DeRozan too, but I think a really motivated De'Aaron Fox is something that I'm really excited to see, and something that I think that Kings fans should be excited to see as well.
Why are you guys laughing at him? What, Brendan? Why are you laughing?
I think Matt may have saw my little low key shade, but no problem.
I didn't see it. What'd you do?
Yeah, no comment. No comment.
No, I want to know.
Matt's got it. I had a little itch on my forehead, but I think that Frankie's point of De'Aaron is the right one.
Brendan flipped Frankie off.
Why?
Yeah, why?
He took my guy. It's no big deal, though. I do think that last year was a learning process when it came to the three-point shooting for De'Aaron. I think sometimes I don't know if settled is the right word necessarily, but he took those shots more than he should have, probably, in my mind. Like, your bread and butter is still finishing around the rim, and that mid-range shot doesn't need to go away. I know modern basketball really doesn't like that, but if you get people on your heels as the fastest, if not top three fastest players in the league, like, that mid-range shot you can get to whenever you want. And I think that still needs to exist a little bit more, and I think it will this next year. I think, like, more so 6-7 threes a game rather than really touching double digits, you know? And I think that the point that I had earlier of how often does Sacramento have the best player on the floor against these other teams, De'Aaron is the one I look at where he could take that next step and be that guy. And DeMar raises their floor, but De'Aaron taking another step is what could really raise their ceiling in my mind. And I think that he does have that potentially in him, but it still needs to be seen defensively, offensively, all over the board, even in a leadership aspect. Like, the Kings clearly need a little bit more leadership vocally, in my mind, as your door just creepily opens.
It's the ghost. Dog is ghost. Right.
What is going on?
Fair enough. I thought ghost right away, but dog makes a lot of sense.
Do you believe in ghosts?
Definitely the one I choose not to, because I got told if I don't believe that they don't exist. So that's the way that I go about it.
That's how you feel about Santa? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. but yes, I think that De'Aaron is definitely that guy, because I do think there's still a lot of room for growth, and he is the one that really dictates their ceiling in my mind.
Well, to ensure I don't get invited on this podcast again, what? I'm going to cheat and say two obscure answers. The first one is Kevin Herter. Like, I genuinely think
Matt,
like
Matt, you're invited again.
Man, that's me. Sorry. Okay, well, me and you, man. I said the same thing to Morgan yesterday.
Because Kevin, I think Kevin is really going to benefit from now. I still think that he's the odd man out and he needs to prove that he's not. But I think Kevin's really going to benefit from a resimplified role. I think last year the Kings were asking more of Kevin Herter and he was in his own head and frustrated and struggled and never looked like himself the entire season, even to a point where he would hit threes during a game and you would see him give this exasperated look on his face of thank God, like finally a shot is dropping. So I think Kevin, whether it's starting or coming off the bench, which is going to be a whole nother debate come training camp time, your role is to be a perimeter poacher. Your role is to space the floor when you get an open look, because you're going to get a lot with Fox and Sabonis and DeMar and whatever. You are going to get a lot of looks, knock them down at a high 30s minimum, maybe even 40% clip. If you can do that, then you have a very prominent, important role on a very successful team here in Sacramento. I'll say that's number one. I'll sneak in two. I'm very interested in Devin Carter. When Devin Carter was selected, I was not a fan of the pick, and I was sitting right next to Brendan Nunes, who actually talked me into it a little bit, because Brendan loved the pick, and I was like, Devin Carter. The hell are the Sacramento Kings doing? So I'm very interested in what Devin Carter looks like, and specifically, can he be, and this sounds disrespectful, but unfortunately, can he be everything that you were hoping Davion Mitchell was supposed to be, except a little bit taller and with a bigger wingspan? Like, can he be that pest annoying defender who can space the floor and knock down threes? If he can be that, he's got a spot on this Kings team for life.
Matt, I love both of those.
You call Kevin a perimeter poacher? I've never
perimeter,
heard that.
Perimeter poacher.
A PP.
Poach.
PP.
Love it.
PP. No, so we're not going to call
he's
him
gotta
a PP.
He's got to be a
Kevin
big PP.
PP.
Yeah.
No. No.
So stupid. Why did I say that? Matt, on your last point, Devin Carter, I just hope it can be a situation where we could see that this year. My fear is that he'll be ready to go in March and then he's not going to play. Mm-hmm. But could in like the optimistic viewpoint, is it like, hey, post All-Star break, all of a sudden you can get him in? Because I think he can definitely. I saw enough of him playing college where I'm like, oh my God, this guy is a freak ass athlete. He's not scared. He plays with confidence. He blows up screens. And as much as I love Davion just for his on ball pressure, to your point, you know, he's limited. Davion's not like a long guy. The wingspan at nearly 6'9 for Devin Carter, good size. Like, he wants to play defense. I think if he was there, I would be even high. I'd be a little higher on the Kings. But, like, I almost am going into next season thinking, we're probably not going to see this guy play.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and my response to that, because I've had that conversation mentally too, because I host a solo podcast and talk to myself. my conversation with myself on that is this: so much of what Devin Carter does as a rookie, I think it doesn't have to be taught. Right. He's almost like a reinforcement. If it's 10 minutes a night and just release him, hey, kid, go out there and play hard. Like, I think he can make an impact just with that alone. Then you can start to layer on the you get more time. You know how to run the offense, how you fit, blah, 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 blah. But I think there's a scenario where he comes back in February. He comes back in March. He's a reinforcement to where Mike Brown just goes, go out there and make something happen. How many times did Mike look at his bench and point to somebody and just go, make something happen? And that's Devin Carter.
If that is the case too, it's like you think about even that little bit of experience, little bit at the end of a season that would help him even developing under this organization going into the next season. So it's like, yes, if he's ready, it's like try to incorporate him.
And the last thing I want to bring up is his Kevin Herter point, unless you had another Devin thing.
Oh, no. Bring up his Kevin Herter point.
I'm with you on Kevin Herter. And my theory on this is like we talked about him being in his own head maybe last year. But I also think coming into camp, his mindset was he was going to be the starting shooting guard. And then like the first week of training camp, we're like, wait, Chris Duarte starting a preseason game? And I think it shook him a little bit. Mm-hmm. We just won 48 games. I was 40% from three, hit over 200 threes with the best offense in NBA history at the time. And I'm fighting for a spot. Right. This year, he knows what he's getting into. He saw what Keon Ellis did. He's coming off injury. They got other guys. I think his mindset going through that will help him.
The trade talks, yeah, everything.
Like, he's just got to go play now. Yep. And he had the worst year of his career last year.
Can only
Kevin Huerter is a much better player than he played last year. And I think that could be another big thing. If he's able to contribute and be closer to that version, I'm not saying like the same amount of point total it is rookie year, but efficiency and what he does on the floor out there,
yeah,
that could be big for Sacramento.
And then the last player I'll say, because Frankie already mentioned DeMar DeRozan, but I'll say Keegan Murray, because, you know, going back to how we even started this podcast and that ESPN survey and just the question of what does the fit of DeMar DeRozan mean for Keegan Murray in his third year in the NBA? And I feel like in a lot of ways, we can be very optimistic about this because we have seen him do so many good things on both ends of the floor. But now, how can he take a leap on both ends of the floor consistently throughout every single game next year and just have a different type of mentality? Like, some people don't just have that switch, but will he have something even in the leadership of DeMar DeRozan that's telling him, shoot the effing ball? Like, take the ball
to the rack. That's my other thing.
Yeah.
Sabonis, I need you to shoot. Do not hesitate. Shoot the mid-range shot. Shoot threes.
We were looking for the same thing last year and it never happened.
Saying. That's what I was saying. We were waiting all year for it to happen and it didn't.
It never did.
Why would you ever bet on that?
The numbers are good. He needs to pump up the volume.
No, you guys are not wrong.
The Warriors series clearly exposed that and he did not do it at all last year. Except like, I think the first game against the Warriors, he shot it a couple times.
Well, he had a lot more short mid-range shots last year than, you know, obviously you want to see.
He was just a fact check here, cleaning the glass. Oh. He made the most mid-range shots of his entire career last year.
Okay. But they were very short. They were very short.
Why say something about his career? It's really what we're getting at.
But we're looking for progress. No, I think there are too many. For me, with Sabonis, too, it's a mental thing. I think too many times he is thinking about, oh, I'm open. Let me find my guy. And it's just like, just shoot it, man. Like, he can knock it down. He can knock down threes, too. He can. And I'm not saying he needs to start taking seven a game, but he would not be the first big in NBA history to go from not being a high-volume three-point shooter and then turn into a guy that takes three to four a game. Al Horford's another one. Like, can he get to that point? Because what that could do for the Kings offense, that could change a lot of things. And then, yeah, I don't know. That's kind of what I'm most curious about. But I'm with you. It's like, well, we haven't seen it. So until we do, it's like, yeah. Guys, I had a lot of fun doing this. Seriously. I appreciate you guys taking the time to hang out. And yeah, let's do it again another time. Yeah, because there's like 800 things I didn't get to. So.
You know, I've been on this pod a few times, so I'd be happy to come back. Shut up.
Brendan Nunes is on 17 different pods that he might co-host or not. So you'll find Brendan Nunes on any pod that exists.
It's so true. Right. That's amazing. No, well, seriously.
I only talk for like half of them. But.
No, I hope you guys had a lot of fun too, because we seriously, it was fun not just talking to each other about the Sacramento Kings during this offseason. So thank you.
It was fun talking to someone else. Yeah, that's pretty neat. I don't do that very often.
And Frankie, fun time. Also, congratulations to Frankie.
Yep.
Engaged.
Papa.
Engaged. Frankie. And got a kid on the way.
Wow. Yeah. Welcome. A lot going on at once.
Oh, my God. Yeah. She's pregnant. We have to get married.
Oh.
No.
They've only been together for like 20 years.
It's been eight, but we were planning to get engaged this year. But, you know, hey, everybody, this is the real world. It's not like TV or movies. And sometimes love you if my kid listens down the line, but surprises happen.
Whoa.
So, yeah. Frankie's son DeMarcus will be here in a couple months.
DeMarcus Weber.
Frankie, play date, Frankie?
Absolutely. Oh. For me and you or for our son?
Screw them, us.
Yeah, dude.
Frankie.
Forget them.
Frankie. I saw the proposal. You were down there for a long time.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Was there a negotiation happening? Like, what?
No.
It just seemed like
were you begging her to marry you?
Best I can do is the MLE. No. Best I can do.
So, I mean, unless you have done, I mean, Matt, and you, I think you're the only one that probably can really, if you haven't been in that moment where you have to do it and you're kind of just putting yourself out there. And even when you know they're going to say yes.
Oh, it's awful.
It's very scary. And you don't really know what's going to come out. And I think that some of her friends were joking, calling me long-winded Frankie, and I was just trying to be nice. I think I was working some jokes in, and it was definitely a little long.
Here comes the divorce. Oh my God.
I honestly blacked out. I mean, I blacked out.
Aww.
Congratulations, dude.
Thank you, man. Thank you, guys. She likes you guys a lot more than me. She likes everybody in here a lot more than me.
No, actually, she's amazing, and I don't know how you landed her. So congrats.
I did have one random question for Matt before we go.
Oh, what?
What if your son was like, he did not want to be a Kings fan, and he was like, I'm sorry, like I'm a Warriors fan, like, and he was legit.
Or Lakers.
What would you
Pelicans.
Do?
And be honest.
Yeah.
Excommunication. No. From the family is no. He's. I'm. If he's excited about a team and interested in a sport, I think I'll at least be excited about that part. I already have to deal with his mother being a Denver Broncos fan. So accept Warriors. If he chooses an LA team, though, I'll need prayer.
Yeah.
Wait, man. I got a question. Yeah, that's my question, Brendan. What if he hates Lord of the Rings? Then what?
Oh yeah, then you're not my child. then you're absolutely not my child,
Matt.
When we got back from the hospital, my wife immediately went to bed, and I sat him down, and we watched the extended editions of Lord of the Rings together.
Jesus,
you know,
is that child abuse?
No, it's called good parenting.
You know, the next time I watch Lord of the Rings will be the first time. I've never seen him.
Okay, well, watch with Matt and his son. Come on.
Matt, invite me over.
Can I give a Deuce and Mo exclusive?
Waited until the end of the pod to say that.
What's your...
I never would have came on here.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Can I give a Deuce and Mo exclusive here if you guys kill time? Brendan knows about this. Nobody else knows about this. This is going to be an opening night.
What the hell is this?
Oh, God.
Is it going to be his pitch to the NBA about having a Lord of the Rings night? Because Matt gets very upset every single time.
He comes in with a beard.
He does. Why don't they have Star Wars night? They should have a Lord of the Rings night.
What if they have baby number two on the way?
I hate that he said I know this because I have not really. I'm sure that the second he shows it, I will remember, but
he'd bring a second kid in the frame.
Yeah.
Right.
He already had the second kid. Okay.
Another
what?
Wife.
And Deuce and Mo exclusive coming opening night. I spent way too much money on these, but these will be donned opening night.
Oh,
wait, 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 wait,
wow.
Wait,
what? Lord of the Rings custom Nike.
Okay, wait. Matt, I kind of have to know the price. You don't have to say the price, but I am so curious because I am like, as much as I've hooped my whole life, I'm not a sneakerhead, and I don't know how much something like that would cost. But I'm going to guess, and you don't have to say, I'm going to guess 800.
No.
Jeez. Well, it was in English pounds, so I had to figure that out, but it amounted to being a little over $300.
Okay. Wow. Okay. I mean,
I'm sell those in the States.
I'm really glad that you didn't spend over $500. Oh my God. I was a little nervous.
Oh no.
Kevin John is going to have so much shit to say.
No,
what are you going to wear that with? Like a cloak or something? You're riding a horse? into Golden One Center,
a suit of armor.
Cloak.
I have a sword strapped to my belt. I might not get in security wise.
Wait, show them one more time.
Yeah.
One more time. You know what I like about them? I like that they're in the in Sacramento A's colors. You know, like it's just the. Is that what you were going for? That?
You are a trolley asshole. That's what you are. Even that's too far. I apologize for his presence here today. Oh my God.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought he was repping the city of Sacramento.
Matt, are you okay?
Fuck this show.
you guys are the best. Seriously, thanks so much for being with us. Thanks so much to everyone watching and listening. We love you guys, but we got to go.
See ya.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you need
need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.